I did not come here to make a cabinet for the ladies of this place, but for the nation.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor, these are little-known stories of the men who've lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Today's Mr. President story will begin in just a moment. But first, see if you can identify these former leaders of our country. For instance, do you know the name of the president whose niece turned Washington topsy-turvy by riding horseback through the White House flower beds? And can you identify the president who kept his entire staff from resigning when he proved that a ghost in the White House was not real? Well, if you didn't score so well on these two questions, our Mr. President show, through its fascinating human interest stories, will reveal many more behind-the-scenes episodes in the lives of our past chief executives. And Mr. President also enlightens the listener about American conflicts and manners calculated to build faith in America. It is true biography in its most revealing form, built around the men who have filled America's highest office. Now listen to today's absorbing drama and see if you can name the president upon whom today's episode is based. Now, in just a moment, Edward Arnold.
I have in mind today tell the story of a president in one of the most unusual set of circumstances that ever took place in Washington. Later on, of course, I'll tell you which president this happened to. But meanwhile, you may be able to guess. He sat by her bedside, his anxious eyes never leaving her face. He knew. Oh, yes, he knew.
Darling, I'm so proud of you. So very proud. Mr. President.
Oh, Rachel, Rachel.
But it is better this way. I'd never fit in the White House, my dear. A long way from the Hermitage to the White House. They're right about that.
Who's right about that?
They've been saying I'd attend your inauguration smoking a corn cob pipe. Did you know that?
Oh, no, no.
They've been saying some terrible things about you. And me, my dear.
They? Who is this mysterious they?
The ladies of Washington, dear. People who would have to receive me in their homes. The wife of the president. People who would never receive me.
Do you think I'd go any place that you're not welcome?
They said I'd be a humiliation to you and a disgrace to the entire country when I went into the White House.
Oh, they're lies, malicious lies, slander.
Didn't you have any idea that people despised me so? I was shopping in Nashville. No one knew who I was. Everywhere I went, I heard...
It doesn't matter what you heard. You're my wife. I love you. I'm proud of you. I want you beside me when I take the oath.
I'll be there. In my own way.
You're going to Washington with me. You can't die. I won't let you die. I won't let you die.
Don't be unhappy. God's will. God's will. I love you, Mr. Price.
Oh, Rachel. Rachel, don't leave me. Don't leave me!
Are you all right, sir? The doctor's on his way.
Hey, John, she's... No, it's just... John, she's...
It's too late.
I'm sorry, sir.
Rachel. Rachel, listen to me. It isn't true. You belong to me. Oh, my wife. I failed you, sir. You'd be alive if it weren't for me.
Oh, don't, sir. You did everything possible. She wasn't well. Her own lack of strength.
Oh, don't you think it, John. Don't you think it for a minute. My wife died because I was elected the President of the United States.
Mr. President, the guests are waiting for you at dinner.
What? Oh, it's you, Peggy.
John is entertaining them, and he asked me to come out and find you.
Oh, I was just sitting here by her grave.
It's cool out here.
Yes. You know, she loved a night like this. She bundled up and hiked for miles across the countryside. And she'd come back glowing. Maybe other people didn't think she was beautiful, or I don't know. But to me, she was the most glorious woman that ever lived.
She was lovely.
Peggy, are you going to marry John?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, he wants to marry you. Peggy, John Eaton's one of my closest friends. He stood by me like a rock all through this campaign. There isn't a finer, more loyal man in the world than John Eaton.
I know, but there's his career to think of.
What does his career have to do with his marrying you?
There's been so much talk about us already.
Talk? What kind of talk?
John was one of my husband's best friends. Naturally, when Mr. Timberlake was away at sea, John would come to call and see that my daughters and I were getting on all right. All of Washington made the most of that. And now, since my husband's death, there's been more and more talk about John Eaton and me. I've told him repeatedly he shouldn't even call.
Talk, talk, slander, gossip, rumors. How many lives are these wagging tongues going to be allowed to ruin? How many more are they going to be permitted to murder? Peggy, believe me, the most successful career in politics is no recompense at all for losing the woman one loves. You saw what happened. You saw what gossip did to Rachel and me. John stuck by me all through that. Don't let it wreck your life and his, too. Don't worry about his career in Washington. I'll take care of that. Well, Peggy, what do you say?
What can I say to that? But yes. And thank you, Mr. President.
Well, speak up, sir. Speak up.
Well, General, it's not easy to tell you, sir, but the Tennessee delegation has appointed me spokesman, and it was something that they felt ought to be taken up before any announcements went out, and, well, after all, your inauguration is so close, and announcements will be going out.
My dear Colonel, I wish you would state your business and stop all this hemming and hawing.
Well, sir, the fact is, the Tennessee delegation and a good many other people in Washington feel that it would be most gratifying to them if you could see a way clear to granting... Oh, may I have a glass of that water, sir?
Of course you can have a glass of water, Colonel.
Thank you, sir.
Now, you didn't have to go through all that trouble to get a glass of water, Colonel.
Oh, well, it isn't a glass of water I came about. The people wanted me to ask you if you'd consider, if it'd be all right, if... is it all right to sit down, sir?
Well, I should say so. The people can sit down whenever they want to sit down.
No. That isn't what I meant. I just wanted to sit because my knees, they don't seem to be all they should be today.
Well, why don't you see a doctor?
Oh, it isn't anything serious, sir. My knees just get this way once in a while.
Well, I'm not inferring you should see a doctor about your knees, Colonel. Just about your cold feet.
Oh, yes. That's very funny, sir.
Now come out with it, man. What did you come to see me about?
The Tennessee delegation would like to suggest that you... Well, you see, there are certain rumors to the effect that that he is to be included. And they would like to respectfully suggest that he is excluded from your cabinet.
Who?
Mr. Eaton, sir.
And just what does the Tennessee delegation find wrong with Mr. Eaton?
Well, as a matter of fact, sir, there's no actual drawback to Mr. Eaton's presence. The drawback is entirely Mrs. Eaton.
Mrs. Eaton?
Yes, sir. I'm afraid, sir, Mrs. Eaton will never be accepted in Washington. Why, even ignoring the presence of any scandal, her background is hardly much of a recommendation. Why, her father's an Irish innkeeper.
My mother was an Irish housekeeper. She had to work in someone else's home to support us. I never knew that was a drawback in America.
Shall I speak openly, sir?
Say anything you've got to say.
Mrs. Eaton was seen far too often in the company of Mr. Eaton while her former husband was alive to make her acceptable to the ladies in Washington.
Is a woman not permitted to have a man as a friend without other women suspecting the worst?
Sir, I'm forced to tell you that Mrs. Eaton will not be received in any official homes in Washington, and none of the ladies will call on her.
Well, Colonel, you may tell the ladies that I am not picking a cabinet for their personal pleasure. I am picking a cabinet around the country. I never asked a woman yet how to conduct a campaign, and I'm a little too old to start learning new tricks.
Well, I warn you, sir, this may turn into a battle.
Good. I like battles, Colonel. And if you care to read a little American history, you'll see that I know how to win them, too. John Eaton will be my Secretary of War.
Oh, Mr. Van Doren, I swear I haven't listened to such wit in months. I'm sure this is the gayest inauguration party the White House has ever seen.
I'm sure you're the most beautiful woman that has ever graced a White House party, Mrs. Eaton.
He's right about that, darling.
Now stop, both of you. You'll turn my head so far, I'll never get it back to normal.
Well, well, this is a merry little group.
Good evening, Mr. President. Congratulations.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you. Are you enjoying yourself?
Heavens, yes. I've been cut dead by some of the best people in Washington tonight.
Only by the ladies, darling, not by the men.
Well, don't let that disturb you, my dear.
Disturb me, Mr. President? I love a good fracas just as much as you do. These languishing blue bloods will find out what it is to do battle with some red-blooded people.
Hello, Irish.
Hello, Irish.
Yes, we'll show them. We'll show them. Incidentally, Peggy, have you talked with my niece, Emily, tonight?
No, but she's been busy with a party this size on her hands.
Well, Emily should make a charming first lady for you, Mr. President.
Yes, yes, I'm very fond of Emily. My nephew made a good match when she accepted him.
Mrs. Eaton, I'm going to give a ball in a few weeks, and since I'm a bachelor, I wonder if you'd help me plan it.
Mr. Van Buren, you're very kind. Don't think I don't appreciate the invitation. But you're choosing a most unpopular hostess.
It's customary, Mrs. Eaton, during any sort of a contest, for a man to choose his side. So, will you do me the honor?
In that case, thank you, Mr. Van Buren. I shall be most honored.
Thank you, Martin. That's a very nice gesture on your part.
It isn't a gesture, Mr. President. It's a pleasure.
Well, excuse me a moment, won't you? I want to speak to Emily.
Of course, Mr. President.
Oh, good evening, Mr. President. Oh, Emily.
Oh.
Emily.
Oh, I wondered where you disappeared to, Mr. President.
Emily, have you spoken to Mrs. Eaton this evening?
No, I haven't.
Do you intend to?
No.
And why not?
Have you any idea of the things that are said about her? You surely wouldn't expect me to recognize a woman of her reputation.
Mrs. Eaton is one of my close friends, Emily. If you and my nephew wish to remain in the White House, I expect my friends to be treated with courtesy. If you don't care to do that, then you'd better think about returning home to Tennessee.
I'll return to Tennessee before I'll associate with Mrs. Eaton.
That, my dear, of course, is up to you.
You don't mean that. You wouldn't turn down your own family for a woman like that.
I expect loyalty from my family as well as my friends. Good night, Emily. Oh, Martin. Martin.
Yeah?
May I speak to you a moment?
Of course, sir.
Here in this room. Martin, I've been thinking a lot about Peggy's position and John's here in Washington. Have any of the ladies returned her calls?
Not many, Mr. President.
Which of the cabinet members' wives are against her?
Mrs. Branch, Mrs. Ingham, Mrs. Berrien.
Martin, what can we do? How can we combat this?
Well, sir, I can see that Mrs. Eaton is accepted by some of the prominent foreign ministers. Sir Charles Vaughan, Baron Krudener. That'll help.
Well, if I don't accomplish one other thing in my term in office, I'll solve this Eaton affair. I'm doing something about all the gossip, at any rate.
Well, what are you doing, sir?
I've sent out detectives to track down every single piece of scandal, every rumor, every insinuation, every innuendo. Each one is going to be tracked to its source and proven or disproven. I've put the best detectives in the country on it.
Do you think that'll do any good, Mr. President?
It certainly will. When I have the reports back from the detectives, I'm going to call a cabinet meeting about them.
A cabinet meeting? About Peggy Eaton?
Yes, sir. I'm going to treat this whole issue as a national problem. We're going to have a cabinet meeting about Peggy's character. Gentlemen of the cabinet,
I've called this meeting for the purpose of discussing the character of Mrs. John Eaton.
Mrs. Eaton?
Yes. Certain individuals have taken it upon themselves to pass on various comments about her. I have examined every one of those comments, tracked them to their source, and had affidavits taken from the people interviewed. I have here some 90-odd pages on Mrs. Eaton. Yes, you will find, after study of this document, that she is above reproach. Now, mark this, and mark it well. An indignity to Major Eaton is an indignity to me. If you are not prepared to work in harmony with him, I am prepared to accept your resignations.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
It has often been said that if you wanted to understand the history of America, you had only to listen to its music. Music that began in the frontier towns, the deltas, and the large and ever-growing cities. And these are the songs you hear on Carnegie Hall, the program that reflects America through its music. Every Sunday evening, Carnegie Hall salutes a different period in American history, eventful days like Thanksgiving, Washington's birthday, Halloween, with music in the spirit of each particular occasion. With a concert orchestra under the leadership of the noted conductor, Dr. Frank Black, Carnegie Hall also brings you leading singers in the concert field. Now, here is a musical listening treat you won't want to miss, with the best in American music and singers coming your way every Sunday night on Carnegie Hall. So listen Sunday evening when Carnegie Hall is heard over most of these same ABC stations. Now, back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
You've probably guessed the name of the president in this story. Later on, of course, I'll tell you which one it was. The gentlemen of the cabinet protested their innocence. They were the last people in the world who would want to harm Major Eaton and his family. They did not accept the invitation to resign, and the president walked out satisfied that he had solved the Peggy Eaton problem. But the war was far from won.
Do you mean to sit there and tell me that he actually suggested that the cabinet resign?
That's exactly what I mean to sit here and tell you.
Oh, that Eaton woman. She's upset the entire cabinet. I told you almost 2 years ago about her, didn't I?
Yes, and I really wish you hadn't. You know, Eaton and Van Buren are the only members of the cabinet that seem to have the president's confidence.
I think it's a perfect disgrace the way Van Buren has taken up with Mrs. Eaton. We ladies intend to do something about him, too. Don't you think for a moment we don't?
Oh, why don't you ladies content yourself with just being ladies for a change?
Peggy Eaton's presence in Washington social life is an insult to every gentlewoman in Washington. We do not intend to rest until both Martin Van Buren and John Eaton have resigned, and that woman has left this town.
Oh, are you going to allow her to leave? I thought you were going to have her burned at the stake. Now, look, the old man feels pretty strongly about this Eaton business. Now, why don't you forget about it before you get me painted into a corner where I'll either have to resign or be fired? The president's made it perfectly clear he can get along without anyone who doesn't like Eaton.
That's only a bluff. Eaton and Van Buren will go. We cabinet ladies have been having meetings about it. You'll see. The president will soon find out which way the wind blows.
Well, that Mrs. Eaton really is a stunning-looking woman.
You too?
If you're about to say Brutus, I wish I had the courage.
John?
Yes, Mr. President.
I'm having a cabinet dinner next week, and I want Peggy in the seat of honor at my right.
Oh, Mr. President, that's going pretty far, do you think?
I am the President of the United States, Mr. Eaton, and while I am the President of the United States, I will choose who sits on my right hand. And if they want to impeach me for it, let them try it. Is Peggy all right, Martin?
Yeah, she's over there talking to the foreign minister, isn't she?
Oh, that's fine. Well, it was a good dinner, wasn't it? Did you see the expressions on those old crows when I let Peggy in? And we'll see who's boss around this town now.
Mr. President, my husband has gone to get my wraps. We are leaving.
Oh, really? Well, I hope you had a pleasant evening. Good night. You'll excuse me, won't you?
Oh. Mr. Van Buren, I am amazed to see a man in the White House who cares so little for public opinion. And I am astounded to see you and Mr. Eaton, who profess to be the friends of the president, permitting him to commit political suicide by his association with the two of you.
My dear woman, you're speaking to me as though I were a child.
My dear Mr. Van Buren, I am, and you are. I suggest you take a little pains to find out just what people are saying about you and Mrs. Eaton, and the president and Mrs. Eaton.
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Mr. President, but it's what people are saying, and it's best that you should know.
They actually have the gall to suggest that Mrs. Eaton and
Yes, Mr. President.
Is there no limit to the lies that they will fabricate?
If there is none, how far do you intend to carry this war, Mr. President?
I'll carry it until I win it, sir, even though it is the end of my political career and the end of my administration. I'll not give up.
Mr. President, when people become a liability rather than an asset, no matter how much you like them, there's only one answer.
Well, I know who the liabilities are, Mr. Van Buren.
I wonder if you do, sir. I wonder if you do.
Peggy, what are you doing sitting here alone in the dark?
Thinking, John.
What about, darling?
Oh, about what a crazy world it is. I heard a story from one of the maids today about...
About the president and you?
Yes.
I hoped you wouldn't hear it.
John, we've got to do something. We can't let him sacrifice himself any further. This conflict can't be won, I realize that now.
The president's quite a man for a fight.
This isn't a man's fight, John. And no man can win it. And I realize now that no woman can win it either. I should never have married you.
Darling, don't say that. Found all the happiness a man could hope to find with a woman. With you. I'd rather have you than be a cabinet member.
Well, then. John?
Yes, Peggy. Yes.
Well, John Martin, you both look tired this evening.
Well, it's been a hard day.
Washington's certainly a divided camp these days. Peggy and I seem to be the ones who've split it.
I seem to have become something of a controversy myself. Mr. President, I've been thinking things over very carefully, and I've come to the conclusion that I should resign from your cabinet.
No, Martin. You know me very little if you think I will ever consent to the humiliation of a friend by my enemies.
I'm the one who's going to resign, not you, Martin.
John?
Mr. President, it's the only solution. Peggy and I have talked it over, and we...
I won't hear of it. It's a complete admission of defeat for all of us, on all our parts.
Well, something bigger is at stake than the admission of a defeat, Mr. President. The reputation of a president, even the reputation of a country. While you're in office, your reputation is the government's reputation.
I see. Well, it's difficult for an old soldier to lay down a gauntlet, even when confronted with such irrefutable logic.
I've brought with me a letter of resignation.
I have a letter of resignation with me, too, Mr. President.
So? Mm-hmm. Well, you don't leave me much choice, do you?
It's the only way, sir.
First of them will stay. Tomorrow I'm going to get the resignation of everyone else in the cabinet. They've succeeded in scuttling the ship of state, and they're going to write down with it. They may have won the battle, but they've lost the war. Well, John, I shall hope to give myself the privilege of calling on Peggy in a day or two. If we can arrange a time when the busybodies won't be at the keyholes.
Mr. President, I can't tell you how very sorry I am about all that has happened.
Oh, don't blame yourself, Peggy. Circumstances were against you. And of all the small, petty gossip that has surrounded you, not one thing has been proven to your discredit.
But I've hurt everyone who's tried to defend me. My husband, you, Mr. Van Buren.
No. Don't feel that way. Your husband is very happy indeed to be your husband. And this will not hurt his career. I have a good position in mind for him in the future, an overseas post.
Oh, thank you for that, sir.
As for myself, you didn't hurt me. Because, Peggy, as much as I like and admire you, I wasn't really fighting for you as much as I was fighting for her.
I know that. But it doesn't make me any the less grateful.
And as for Martin Van Buren, well, Peggy, I'm sending him overseas to be our minister to England, and because he became your champion, Martin Van Buren may one day be the president of the United States. Because when he became your champion, I became his.
Oh, Mr. Craddock, I don't quite know what to say except I love you very much.
May I return the compliment, Mrs. Eaton, to both you and your husband?
We can't be friends anymore, you know, Mr. President. Not publicly. As long as John and I are, we can't be friends.
You know, one of these days, when I'm no longer president, we'll all be close again. Because in our hearts, my dear, we three will be friends as long as we live.
Yes, of course we will. But until that time, goodbye, Mr. President.
Goodbye, Mrs. Eaton. Well, you've probably figured out by now who I was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
The singing stars of the future are heard on the Metropolitan Opera auditions of the air. This program, broadcast each Sunday over most of these ABC stations, has already selected more than 40 new members of the Metropolitan Opera. Each week, young singing stars who aspire to a career in grand opera are given a chance to compete for contracts with the Met winners of previous auditions, including such noted stars as Eleanor Stieber, Patrice Munsell, Robert Merrill, Leonard Warren, and many others. Remember, for one of the most interesting musical experiences in radio, don't forget to listen to the Metropolitan Opera Auditions of the Air every Sunday afternoon over most of these ABC stations. It's a musical treat that you won't forget. Now, here again is Edward Arnold.
Well, Martin, are you all packed for your trip to England?
Yes, indeed, sir. I'm quite looking forward to it. You know, all those ladies in Washington who thought you would be easy to manage should have remembered that nickname of yours, Old Hickory.
Are you inferring I'm stubborn, Mr. Van Buren?
Stubborn? Oh!
Mr. Van Buren!
I just wish you could live to read what history will have to say about that stubbornness. And about that period in American history when the President of the United States was Andrew Jackson.
Yes, it was Andrew Jackson who called a cabinet meeting to defend the reputation of Peggy Eaton, and who dismissed the entire cabinet except for the Postmaster General, when John Eaton and Martin Van Buren felt it was necessary to resign. But years later, when Old Hickory was no longer president, they were indeed reunited. And Peggy Eaton, his friend, was at his bedside when he died. Come and see me again next week, won't you? I'll have another story about a president who gambled his career in a most extraordinary manner. Goodbye.
Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producing a Technicolor picture, The Three Musketeers, starring Lana Turner, Gene Kelly, and June Ellison.
Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Leonard Reed. This story by Gene Holloway was based on incidents in the life of President Andrew Jackson. Music was composed by Basil Adler.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company. With another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.